From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, there are elections coming up, as you probably know. And before early voting starts, our goal on Connections is to bring as many candidates who are on the ballot to you at length. Of course, our goal is to do that when the opponents can come on the program together. Not even necessarily for a debate. I don't really like that term in this setting. It's more of a conversation about the issues. And that's happened in some races this year. In other cases, like what you're about to experience, we had one candidate respond and one did not. And that's in a race for New York State Assembly. A 14-year incumbent is Harry Bronson, who is the Democrat in that race. He is running for re-election. His opponent is a Republican, Tracy DeFlorio, who did not respond to our outreach. So for our first half hour on this particular program, we've got Harry Bronson, who's back with us. Welcome. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Assemblyman.
Thank you for having me on the show again.
And I apologize to listeners who were hoping to hear both, but we're doing what we can. Do you even have a campaign, 14 years in, do you have a campaign website you want to share?
Yeah, you can look me up at bronsonforassembly.com.
Okay, and I think, I'm pretty sure you're, I know your opponent has one. We're going to link to it in our show notes in an act of good faith there. And we'll talk a little bit about what your opponent has said in this campaign, but let me just start with this here. I think listeners know you pretty well, but I do want to ask you why you want to keep doing this. I mean, you've done this for seven terms you've done?
Seven terms, just finishing up my 14th year. And I'm honored and privileged to be able to represent the people and families of the 138th Assembly District. I want to continue to represent them because I think we're doing good work and we're making changes that will benefit those individuals and families that we represent. I get up every day looking forward to going to work. I love what I do for two reasons in particular. The first is, as a lifetime learner, I literally learn something new every single day. And the second and most important is I'm in a position to try to help people. And I try each day to help people, whether it's through direct constituent services, helping them be connected to state agencies and things of that nature, or whether it is helping them by passing legislation or funding programs and services that they need.
What would you say is accomplishment one that you look back at your career so far and say, I am proud that this is on the resume?
Wow. There are a lot. I will put marriage equality, which we passed early on in my career. I had worked on that issue for a decade prior to becoming an assembly member. And so we were able to get that done. I would also say the bill that is still being implemented and hopefully will have the results, and that is the passage of the Child Poverty Reduction Act to reduce child poverty by 50%. And then the last is a bill that I passed 2 years ago, which literally provided an additional just under 10,000 mental health professionals to be able to diagnose and develop treatment plans so that we can get folks the services they need when they're in a situation where a mental health diagnosis, behavioral or emotional needs for therapy.
I want to talk a little about poverty, and you talk about child poverty. In June, you were part of an announcement from state leaders that the Rochester-Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, or RMAPI, is getting $750,000 to expand operations. And they're now in year 10, RMAPI is. Rochester remains one of the top five poorest cities of its size in the country. We've got near record levels of kids in poverty, kids in extreme poverty. What is it that you think, when you look at our MAPI, what makes you say, this is working, we should invest more state money in this?
Sure. Well, I took the lead to get that $750,000. We have funded our MAPI several times in the budget. That's the second year that they had received $750,000. And let me just back up. When RMAPI was initially created, there were nine other similar anti-poverty initiatives created in the state. RMAPI is the only one that still survives. I think it is a collaborative, collective of voices that includes life experience voices of those who are living in poverty or have lived in poverty. And they are constantly looking at policies and things that we're doing at the state level or local government is doing, and they're trying to push for those policies and funding mechanisms that will help lift people out of poverty. They've had, you know, some success. I don't think it's fair to say, you know, let's look at RMAPI and then, you know, how does that translate and where we are in poverty? Because the issue is so complex and there's so many factors involved, and decades of, you know, racism in the city and in our area that has an impact on poverty. The entire system has impacts on poverty. It's when you're poor, the cost of things, you know, fines and fees and things of that nature have a huge impact on that individual and that family. RMAPI is trying to tackle those kind of things, and so I think it's worth to continue to invest in them. And we, you know, we have seen a reduction, in particular in child poverty, over the years here in Rochester.
I take your point that there's not a city that I know in the country where, you know, the dynamics, the demographics are similar to Rochester, but they've got, you know, 3% poverty. I mean, like, it just doesn't really happen. There, poverty is everywhere. There's not a city that has a magic bullet. Of course, if there was, then everyone would copy it. So I take that point that it's complex for sure. But, you know, almost 10 years ago, one of the initial leaders of RMAPI, Leonard Brock, said, in 15 years, we want to cut it by 50%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is not going to come close to happening. So what benchmark should we have?
So, you know, as I mentioned, I introduced and we passed the Child Poverty Reduction Act. That's by 50% in 10 years. Similar objective.
How's that work, by the way? Tell the listeners what it does.
All right. So it has put together a group of experts, including a representative from the Children's Agenda here in Rochester, a group of experts to look at policy decisions and budgetary decisions and to create recommendations to the state on what we can and what we can do, what we should do. A really interesting example is this. You know, during the pandemic, you know, the $600 when people were on unemployment, and then it was $300. Getting money directly in the pockets of families is the best solution to poverty. Bruce Popper, a good friend who's no longer with us, who headed up SEIU. He was part of RMAPI, and I remember in that one meeting when, you know, we're discussing, you know, how are we going to address poverty and things of that nature, and Bruce Popper just said bluntly, pay them more. And what he meant was through wages, pay them more. But the reality is, if you get money in the pockets of families who are living in poverty, that's how you lift them out.
Okay. Now, want to do my best to understand where you and your opponent may differ. Again, your opponent did not respond, is not here, so you're the only one here. So it goes. But your opponent said she wants to, quote, support charter schools, homeschooling, and non-traditional educational paths like apprenticeships and trade schools because, in her words, one-size education does not fit all students, end quote. What do you make of that?
Well, I strongly support public education. I think it's a responsibility of our state to support public education. I'm always advocating and fighting for additional funds for our students in public education. I think students deserve, and our Constitution requires, that they get a quote-unquote sound basic education. And I think our public schools are obligated to provide that quality of education. I also acknowledge that, you know, there are some families who want to send their children to other types of schools. That's their right, and I don't oppose them doing that. I just think it's better. Public education is a collective way of educating all of our children, and I just want to make sure all of our children get a quality education.
Your opponent, Republican Tracy DeFlorio, says New York State should immediately stop all financial support for people who have come to our community seeking asylum. She calls them illegal migrants. Do you support the $2.4 billion New York State has allocated to help people who cross our southern border, seek asylum, and end up here?
I supported the budget item for that funding, and I'm proud that I supported it. First of all, asylum seekers are not illegal. We have a process in place, and some of these folks are following that process. You know, this is about humanity, and you've heard me say it before, and I'm going to say it again, and many people have heard me say my mantra, and that's no matter who you are, what you look like, where you come from, what your abilities, how you identify and who you love, we all have dignity, and with that, we deserve equity, justice, and opportunities. So for me, when we're talking about migrants, it is that I want to see their humanity first, and I want to offer them opportunities. We can provide for our citizens and also provide for people who are migrating here.
Okay. I think your opponent would say, hey, that's $2.4 billion. That should go for New Yorkers.
You can grab any line item in the budget and say it should go someplace else. My job as the assembly member is to help make the decisions and priorities. And, you know, we have the highest level of funding in education this year. We increased reimbursement rates to our hospitals and our nursing homes this year. We have funding increases for early childhood intervention this year, although hasn't been processed timely. We're working on that. And other priority items that we're going to continue to fund. But that's not to say that, you know, we shouldn't also provide for people who are here.
All right, let me talk about public safety a little bit. Again, I'm trying in good faith to understand the differences between the candidates. Harry Bronson, who's running for re-election to the New York State Assembly, who is with us this hour. Tracy DeFlorio, the Republican in the race, is not. She did not respond to our request to come on this program. She has said, she says this, quote, crime and chaos are everywhere. Grocery stores, pharmacies, and restaurants continue to close as a result of theft and the concern for employee safety, end quote. So as a little bit of a fact check, crime is down in New York State 6% year over year. New York, in the rankings I'm seeing, ranks 20th overall, meaning 30 states have higher average incidence of crime than New York. So we're in the bottom half in terms of how high crime is. And she's not on this program to explain which pharmacies and grocery stores and restaurants have been closing in large numbers because of theft and safety. Are you aware of large numbers of grocery stores, restaurants, and pharmacies closing for safety?
I am not aware of a single one that has closed for those
reasons.
I'm
asking you honestly. Like,
I am not aware of a single one that has closed for those reasons. Certainly in my district, no business has called us and said they were closing for that reason. But the comment is misplaced because the suggestion is somehow state laws have caused the increase in the spike in crime that we've seen in our area. Yet, if it's the state law, there's other areas that didn't have similar spikes. So how did the state law cause it? And, you know, why isn't Buffalo, New York experiencing the same thing that Rochester, New York is? So that's one thing. But we also have to look. You know, the mayor gave an announcement last week that and gave the numbers showing that the number of gun shootings in the city of Rochester is now at the rate it was pre-pandemic. And we all know crime went up, and all types of crimes went up during pandemic and continued for a little bit after the pandemic. But we're seeing all types of crimes in our area go down significantly. And that shows that what we're doing is working. It shows that our investment in law enforcement is working. It shows that, you know, the governor who has put state troopers in place to partner with our local law enforcement is working. It shows that our investments in programs and services that help young people see alternative paths and go down alternatives is working. We know in the JEDS program, the juvenile enhanced diversion program that County Executive Adam Bello put in place, the recidivism rate there is 5%. So we know what's working. We also gave judges the discretion that law enforcement asked them to have. We gave them that discretion. We offered bail as a possibility when there's more than one accusation of an offense. We allow judges now to look at the criminal history of an individual, what the actual charges and things of that nature. So the things that have been asked of us by law enforcement, we've put those things in place. And we continue to see the levels of crime go down. All that being said, if it's your car that gets stolen, your house that gets broken into, your child that gets shot, those numbers don't mean anything to you. And I fully understand that. And that, to me, says we still have a lot of work to do.
What can you do?
We're going to continue to use the programs that we've put in place. We're going to continue to fund those programs, Pathways to Peace as one example. So that is to try to prevent that level of crime. We're going to do what I spend much of my time on, and that's creating opportunities for young people and other people to be fully employed and fully employed with good pay, so that offers them a different alternative. We're going to continue to work on what I've worked on a lot, and that's mental health issues. And all of that, those complex factors that we have to put in place, we're going to continue to work on, because one person getting shot is one too many.
One other point of distinction between you and your opponent, then I want to get a couple of listener comments. Tracy DeFloria, the Republican, has said, New York State has unattainable energy goals, and those goals are driving up our utility costs. Do you agree or disagree?
Not true. Our goals are ambitious, and whether we meet them or not, I'm not sure, but we should be trying, because our future planet is something we need to save for our future families. I just got back from Sweden. I led a delegation as chair of the Assembly Labor Committee. I led a delegation of my colleagues in the Assembly, colleagues in the Senate, Cornell University, and we met with the Sweden government, parliament. We also met with local government at Stockholm, and we met with industry leaders in the energy industry, and we met with labor leaders. The goal, Sweden is a leader in making the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energies. So our goal was to learn from them, see what steps they've taken so that we can bring those back. And we have some programs that we want to try to implement here in New York that they have implemented over in Sweden, so that we can meet those climate goals. It's absolutely necessary. That's the number one issue facing our generation.
Is it affecting utility costs?
I don't believe it is affecting utility costs, but we have to be very intentional about this. We have to make sure that we have stability in the energy that's available, the supply, during peak hours and off hours. That's why I helped with Rochester Institute of Technology to get a federal grant. It's led by SUNY Binghamton. It's a collaboration between SUNY Binghamton, Cornell, RIT, and others to do more research and innovation and battery storage, because we're going to absolutely need that when we convert more to solar and wind energy. We're going to continue to work on this. I absolutely believe that we need to be intentional and take steps so that we can meet our goals, so that we can save this planet for our kids.
All right, a couple of listener comments. This is a comment from Ray, and it's an example of a downtown grocery store that has left, not because of violence, but Hearts is an example of just a grocery store that couldn't make it work financially. But Ray is saying, I used to live downtown, but because of a lack of supermarket and drugstore or retail, I decided to move out of the city. I wanted to be near retail that I could walk to. What is the state doing about encouraging retail in our downtown areas?
What the state does is it funds projects. There's one source of funding, the Downtown Revitalization Initiatives. The city has received funding for that. They're using it to redevelop some blighted property near Parcel 5. And so that's what we can do, is to encourage it through funding mechanisms. I know the mayor has had conversations. We've spoken about his conversations regarding grocery stores downtown. and the lack of them. And so we're, you know, we can work on it, but at the state level, it's really us funding the locality to make those things happen.
All right. Charles writes to say that, you know, that as a gun owner, he's been frustrated at times. He's been in touch with your office. He says, your communications guy's wrong. Ammo background check delays are not happening just because it's almost hunting season. They happen year round, regardless of whether or not it's hunting season and regardless of what kind of ammo you're buying. So he's frustrated with whatever is happening in New York State in regards to ammo and guns there.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've really looked at what we did there. I know there was a background. We passed a requirement for a background checks for ammunition. The reason is so that, you know, we can have red flags, if you will, that someone's buying a lot of ammunition and what they're going to be using it for. But, you know, that particular detail I'm not familiar with.
On the subject of energy, he says the last time you were on this program, you talked about living in an all-electric house. Is that right?
I live in an all-electric house. Yes.
Okay. And he says, you know, he thinks you made that sound a little bit too easy when it is expensive. There's a lot of money that can be caught to cost retrofitting it. And that, you know, he thinks you kind of glossed over the challenge for the average person to do what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I married into an all-electric home. So it's not like my father-in-law years ago put in geothermal for the large farmhouse. And so I will acknowledge to him that, yes, this is costly. We are working on trying to develop more tax credits to offset those costs. And that's part of our planning as we move toward a green economy. We're going to have to do work in that regard to offset those costs for families.
Okay.
I acknowledge that.
About a minute and a half here. What are the other issues that are really animating what you want to do next here? Tell listeners, if you're elected, what the next couple of years might look like.
Yeah, so I'm very excited. I've been appointed to chair the Assembly's Labor Committee. That appointment happened in January of this year. So a lot of my work is going to continue to be regarding assuring good pay for workers, that they have safe workplaces, and that they're receiving good benefits. That's important because it will address the inflation issues that many of our families are facing. Also, under my purview as chair of the Labor Committee is workforce development. So we're going to be looking, and part of the trip to Sweden was all about the workforce development as well. And how do you make sure you protect individuals who are currently working in the fossil industry and help them make the transition to the green economy? How do you, with folks with the emerging and expanding workforces associated with the transformation to a green economy, how do you get them trained in the skills necessary to fill those jobs? Micron coming, we've got a couple of years to gear up for that. So a lot of what I'm going to do is work on apprenticeship programs and other workforce programs as chair of the Labor Committee to make sure not only that we're getting people skilled in the trades they need to obtain those jobs, but also be intentional to make sure we're including those individuals who have been on the economic sideline and workforce sidelines for far too long. So folks from marginalized communities and others, we want to make sure that they're part of this new economy.
That phone call was for the assemblyman, is that right? So let me just squeeze this in. Rich had called in to ask or to make the comment. He thinks it's short-sighted to shut down nuclear power in the state. What do you think?
We're not going to shut down nuclear power right away. That's got to be part of the transition plan. We have to nuclear power, as we learned from Sweden, is part of the way that they stabilize the fluctuation in the power grid from renewable energies. They're using nuclear power. I am very concerned about nuclear power and the waste that it generates. And until we have better technologies and science to reuse that waste, right now, I find it to be a problematic to consider that to be a constant in the way we provide and supply energy. But in the transition, it's got to be part of the transition.
So you don't support building new nuclear in the future?
Correct.
But you're not in favor of shutting it down entirely right now?
Not at this point. I don't know how we will supply the energy. And remember, as we're asking people to buy electric vehicles and we're asking people to build new electric homes, things of that nature, the demand on electricity is going up. So we have to be intentional and strategic as we make this transition to renewables.
Harry Bronson is running for re-election to the New York State Assembly. His website is bronsonforassembly.com. Thank you for saying yes and for being on this program. We appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me and having other candidates on. It's a good service to the public.